This is True Crime Psychology and Personality, where we discuss the pathology behind some of the most horrific crimes and those who committed them from a scientifically informed perspective.
I'm Dr. Todd Grande. I have a PhD in counselor education and supervision, and I'm a licensed professional counselor of mental health. Dr. Todd Grande, that's my YouTube channel.
Well, this is Dr. Grande. Today's question is, can I analyze the case of Glenna and Martin Durham? First, I'll look at the background of this case, move to the timeline of the crime, then offer my analysis. Glenna Mary Durham was born in 1968 and lived in Grand Rapids, Michigan. She met a man named Martin Durham when they were both teenagers. He went by the name Marty. They briefly dated, but the relationship didn't work out. When Glenna was 17, she married a man named Bob Norman. They eventually had two children. A few years later, in 1991, Marty also moved on romantically. He married a woman named Christina Keller. The couple would go on to have three children. Marty really wasn't interested in working for a living, which caused some friction in the marriage. He finally found a job in 1995. On February 16, 1995, when driving home from his fifth day of work, another vehicle ran through a red light and collided with Marty's vehicle. Marty was seriously injured. After waking up from a coma, he had severe memory problems. For example, he could not remember his wife or his children. In addition, Marty's personality appeared to change. He was now impulsive, demanding, and angry. Christina divorced Marty sometime later. Marty received a settlement from the vehicle collision and combined it with a loan to purchase a house on East 128th Street in Sand Lake, Michigan. This is about a half hour north of Grand Rapids. He lived in the house with two of his children and an African gray parrot named Bud. Marty wasn't the only one who had divorced. As it turned out, Glenna's marriage didn't work out either. Marty and Glenna decided to rekindle their earlier romantic relationship. In 2001, Glenna moved into Marty's house. In February 2005, the couple married. The damage from the 1995 motor vehicle collision was something that continually plagued Marty. Over time, his symptoms became worse. He was not able to work. Marty received $1,100 a month in disability payments, and Glenna was paid over $3,100 a month to take care of him. For extra cash, Marty sold some of his prescription narcotics. Allegedly, Glenna also participated in this endeavor. Marty and Glenna had very different approaches to money. Despite being a drug dealer, Marty was fairly conscientious regarding his financial obligations. He always paid his mortgage and other bills on time. At some point, however, he allowed Glenna to take over the bills. Glenna preferred to spend money in a wasteful manner. She would frequently go to casinos and gamble. Sometime around the spring of 2014, she stopped paying the mortgage. The payment was $700 a month, and the couple still owed $48,000 on the house. Glenna also failed to pay other bills, like the car payment. She lied to Marty and said that she was taking care of all the bills. In April 2015, Marty's mother called him and told him that a legal notice had been published in a local newspaper saying that his house was being foreclosed. Marty asked Glenna what this was all about. She told him it was a mistake and she would contact the bank. On April 28, foreclosure documents were left at the front door of the Durham house. Now moving to the timeline of the crime. Glenna and Marty were friends with neighbors who lived across the street. The neighbors, Connie Ream and her husband Keith, frequently communicated with the Durhams and were familiar with their habits. On May 12, 2015, the same day that the Durham house was scheduled to be auctioned, Connie Ream heard two gunshots at around 7:30 a.m. She was not alarmed by this because she knew that Marty would regularly hunt in the area. Later that day, Connie's husband, Keith, called her and informed her that Marty was not answering text messages. After finishing work for the day, Connie stopped by the Durham house to investigate. The doors were locked, and no one answered when she knocked on both the doors and the windows. Connie could hear the Durham's dog barking, in the master bedroom. Later that evening, Connie sent Glenna a text message asking if she and Marty were home, but there was no response. The next morning, now on May 13, Connie returned to the Durham house. Other than the dog barking, there were no other signs of life. At about 3:30 p.m., Connie once again made her way to the Durham house. At this point, the front door was unlocked, so she walked in. Connie noticed that the living room was a complete mess. When she entered the master bedroom, she found Marty and Glenna on the floor and believed that they were both dead. Connie ran to a nearby house to call for help. She was able to get the attention of three firefighters who just happened to be tending to an unrelated incident in the area. Connie and the firefighters entered the house together. When Connie walked into Glenna's bedroom, she once again looked at Glenna. This time, Glenna's head appeared to be in a different position than it had been earlier. Connie attributed the difference to her imagination and did not immediately say anything to the authorities. The first responders reported that they had found two dead bodies. They did not bother checking to see if Glenna was alive. About an hour later, a police officer who was trying to manage the Durham's dog noticed that Glenna appeared to be breathing. He walked over and checked Glenna for a pulse. At this moment, she opened her eyes and sat straight up. She then became combative and was taken to the hospital. An examination revealed that Glenna had been shot behind her right ear. She appeared to have two bullet wounds, but it was not clear if she had been shot once or twice. The injury was non-lethal, and Glenna eventually recovered. Her husband, however, was not as fortunate. He had been shot 5 times and did not survive. Martin Durham was 46 years old. Here's what the police found during their investigation. Under a chair in the living room, the police discovered a Ruger new model single-six revolver, which was chambered in .22 Winchester Magnum rimfire. This round has about twice the muzzle energy of the extremely popular .22 long rifle. The police believed that this Ruger revolver was the murder weapon. There were a few spent cartridge cases and one intact cartridge on the bed in the master bedroom. One of the pillows had holes in it, as if somebody had shot through the pillow. Several items in the kitchen and living room had Glenna's blood on them. Glenna's cell phone was examined by the police. On May 11, 2 days before the discovery of Marty's body, a text message was sent from Glenna's phone at 11:40 p.m. The recipient was a user labeled Mom. On May 12, just after 3:30 a.m., Glenna's phone was used to search for information about Ruger firearms. At 4:48 a.m., the phone sent another text message to the user labeled Mom that read, "Love you, sorry." 9 seconds after this message was sent, the phone accessed a web page titled, quote, "Ruger New Model Single Six Single Action Revolvers," unquote. There was no activity on Glenna's phone after 4:55 a.m. On May 14, the day after Marty was found dead, his three children used a credit card to gain entry into his house. Ostensibly, they had permission from the police. His children found a manila envelope in the living room, which contained three white envelopes. Each one was addressed to a different person, namely Glenna's husband, son, and daughter. The envelopes contained letters written in Glenna's handwriting. The content of the letters was consistent with the idea that she was apologizing. In October of 2015, Glenna had finally recovered enough to be interviewed by the police. She explained to them that she did not remember anything related to Marty's death. As far as the apology letters, Glenna said that they sounded like something she may have written in the past. She denied using her phone to look up information about Ruger firearms, stating that if she was on her phone, it was just to play games online. Regarding the accusation that she killed Marty, Glenna stated, quote, "I did not kill him. I wouldn't kill him because he was all I had," unquote. The police thought that Glenna was involved in the murder, but they didn't feel comfortable making an arrest. In theory, the murder could have been carried out by an intruder. After all, Glenna had been shot in the head. She may have been shot twice. Nothing much happened with the murder investigation for a while. That changed after Marty's ex-wife, Christina, released a video recording which drew attention back to the murder case. Christina had taken custody of Marty's parrot, Bud. About a month after Marty's death, she made a 2-minute video recording of Bud because he made statements which appeared to be relevant to Marty's murder. In the recording, Bud can be heard saying things like, "No, no, shut up, get your blank over here, don't shoot," and "Don't blanking shoot." The talking bird ruffled some feathers, and the media started watching the case like a hawk. People wondered if the prosecution was going to put Bud on the stand in the hope that he would sing like a canary and cause Gwenna's goose to be cooked. Could the parrot really facilitate Gwenna's swan song, or would he chicken out? As it turns out, compelling a parrot to testify in court is quite difficult, so the state wasn't going to flip the bird. They were going to have to generate a better reason for knowing that Gwenna was the killer than "a little bird told me." This better reason would come later in the form of Gwenna's DNA being discovered on the Ruger revolver. On June 24, 2016, Gwenna was arrested and charged with murder. She was convicted over a year later on July 19, 2017. Ultimately, Gwenna received life in prison. Now moving to my analysis. Gwenna Durham has maintained her innocence, and she has many supporters. The state, of course, is happy to parrot the finding of the jury, who found Gwenna guilty. This brings me to the question, was Gwenna actually guilty of murder? Let's take a look at the evidence both for and against the idea that Gwenna was guilty, starting with the inculpatory factors. Gwenna and Marty had a contentious relationship. She frequently joked about wanting him to die. Gwenna had a gambling habit and was financially irresponsible. She was hiding the fact that she had not paid the bills. The house was supposed to be auctioned on the day Marty was killed. There was no forced entry into Marty's house. Marty was shot and killed with a Ruger revolver that had been stored in his safe. It is unlikely that an intruder would use a firearm from inside a victim's home. Gwenna's DNA was found on the revolver. Apology letters written in Gwenna's handwriting were found in the house, as if she had been preparing to make her exit from this world. Gwenna's cell phone was used to search information on the same type of firearm that was used to kill Marty. A physician testified that even though Gwenna had been shot behind the ear, she could have still functioned. It was possible that she could have discharged the weapon, placed it under the chair in the living room, and walked into the bedroom. This is true whether she fired one time or two times. Moving to the exculpatory factors, Marty was a drug dealer, which meant that he interacted with a criminal element. Maybe somebody was angry about a deal gone bad. No DNA was found on the spent cartridge cases or on the intact cartridge. Even though Gwenna could have technically fired two shots into her own head, functioning after the first shot would be unlikely. When considering all the evidence, do I think that Gwenna was guilty of murder? Yes, I believe she was guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Here's what I think happened in this case. This is just a theory, my opinion. Gwenna and Marty had a contentious relationship. They each had their own problems. Marty was demanding, controlling, manipulative, and he was dealing drugs. Gwenna was impulsive, irresponsible, and had a gambling problem. She caused the house to get foreclosed. Gwenna was not willing to face the consequences of her behavior and decided to bring an end to her own life. She thought it would be fitting to bring Marty along with her, perhaps simply for revenge. Amazingly, Gwenna survived being shot. She probably would have escaped justice, except she connected herself to the murder weapon through her internet searches and DNA. Now moving to my final thoughts. Although Bud the Parrot offered an interesting twist in this case, he did not play a role in the trial. Clearly, the words he repeated could have been learned after the murder. I don't know if Bud repeated statements made during the murder, but Gwenna could be reliving that moment as she sits in prison for life. She probably wishes that she was as free as a bird, although considering how bad her living circumstances were, perhaps she considers prison to be a gilded cage.
This has been True Crime Psychology and Personality from Ars Longa Media. This content is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Ars longa, vita brevis.